Well, I'm so giggly. Roses are red and violets are blue. Take a shot of tequila because I have a true crime story for you. Hi, I'm back. I think. I don't know how consistently I will be, but I have finally decided to record my episode. So, welcome back to Tuesdays with Trisha, season 3, episode 2, finally. I think it's been like a year later now. It's a little ridiculous, and I'm sorry. I've had so much going on, which I'm sure all of you have had tons of stuff going on. So, as we go through this episode, I will try and catch you up on life and things that we definitely need to catch up in the true crime world. So, first of all, welcome to 2023. And I just want to pre-warn anybody listening to this episode that please take care and caution while listening to this episode because sometimes we talk about gruesome shit. So, don't want you to have your little ones in the car or, your grandma or maybe even your boyfriend who secretly thinks you might murder him because of all the murder that you listen to, which I get often in relationships. Promise you, not crazy, just crazy about true crime. So I guess to update everybody, since my last episode, I'm pretty sure took place in Texas, if I remember correctly. I am now back in California. Back in Southern California, where I started Tuesdays with Trisha. I am older and wiser and finer, like I tell myself every day. Just kidding. I really don't do that. I really probably have a lot of insecurities that I try to mask daily. But I'm enjoying it being back. It's, I definitely have to say that I loved Texas and I loved being there. And Kansas was a good little stint, which I don't even think any of my listeners know, unless you're personal friends with me, that you know that I was actually even in Kansas. Loved it out there too. Loved my family. A shout out to the DeMasters family for being there for me. And just being my family in general and getting to know them, it's was wonderful. And I'm so thankful for them and all the generosity that they showed me and my daughter while we were out there. So shout out. And if you guys have listened to my podcast before, then you're definitely familiar with my cousins, Lena and April, who I love very much. So I guess just to get back into it, I was doing some research and, obviously there's been a couple cool things. I mean, I guess not cool, but, because it's murder. But I know that the Lori Vallow case is in trial right now, which if you've been following the, murder of JJ and Tylee, or I guess supposed. So she's on trial for that. That's the Idaho case. I do have an episode on that. If you haven't checked it out, go back and listen to it. So it kind of gives you update. But I do need to update that episode. And actually, you can check out my cousin's podcast, Hair Raising Horror. She definitely has an episode that her and I did on there about more recent stuff right before like the trial came out. So you can update on that. So I've been following that closely, of course. Of course, looking at any local murder and stuff. And crazily, a few weeks ago, I took an impromptu Tahoe trip and I ended up stopping at Scott Peterson's old house because we were in Modesto. Like it was like on the way. And we had Googled it. And I, totally kind of freaked out because it was like, oh, I think it was like 18 minutes maybe off the freeway from where we're at. So I was like, dude, I can totally make an 18-minute detour. And it was creepy. I don't know. I had so many like things going through my head when I was like driving down the street, just trying to imagine like so many things, regular suburbia. Modesto's actually a really cool like little town, like where they lived. It's super quaint and cute. And I mean, I saw it at nighttime, so I probably didn't see everything, but the neighborhood that they lived in was really nice, actually. But it was different, definitely pulling up to the house. And, of course, I didn't get out or anything because I felt weird about it, like taking pictures. I did snap some photos, but they were from the car. But I didn't get out. I was a little bit of a chicken shit, plus people live there clearly. So, it's not like you can like walk up the property, but just kind of like looking at the street and the views and just, I don't know, just reminiscing about the case. That's obviously been one that's stuck with me for quite a bit. And I'm always following the serial killers. Netflix and Hulu are super good about bringing out cool documentaries, especially Netflix. There's been a couple of my friends have sent to me. Shout out to Alicia for sending me one a documentary series on Netflix that I've been checking out, and I can't remember it. I'm spacing it, so whenever it comes to me, I will throw it in this episode, or you can write me on Instagram. I am at Trishlyn Marie 32 now. I'm currently the other two Instagram accounts that I have taken down. So I will revamp the Tuesdays with Trisha one, but currently I don't have one. So you can always shoot me on my personal Instagram if you have any questions, especially if you have any cases that you want to share with me, because I'm always up for a good murder talk. I'm also really into reality TV and all that gossip. People have always known me as being like a pop culture type of girl. So I do been following all of that on television, especially the Vanderpump Rules crap that's been going on. So if you're familiar with that and you like to chit chat about stuff like that, or just latest celebrity gossip stuff, yeah, small little tidbit that I like to do. So it's funny because I, always, I'm thinking about the new, the late, the old serial killers that a lot of people know of that are like, famous. I've had like big cases and stuff. And, Ted Bundy, of course, is a huge case, and he was like that infamous serial killer that preyed upon like brown-haired and brown-eyed women, and they knew him as like super charming and, like he was very suave, especially when he went to the court and stuff like that. He was like a showstopper type of guy, and they glorified him a lot. And I don't think they glorified him. I'm just saying, like, the popularity of Bundy, John Wayne Gacy, Ed Gein and stuff has just kind of like skyrocketed. So it got me thinking about like other serial killers and just, like why certain, people get national attention and why other people don't get national attention. But I was funny because I was Googling Ted Bundy, and then all of a sudden I came across a woman who was like basically deemed as like a murderer, serial killer, and her name was Carol M. Bundy. And I was like, yo, there's another Bundy. And I was kind of just like, whoa, this would be really weird if it was like kind of like that same, but like the girl version. It's definitely not like that, but I've never heard of her. I don't know if you guys have heard of her. So I want to talk about some Carol motherfucking Bundy today. And so this is the case of Carol Bundy and Doug Clark. Okay, y'all, back from my little water break here. Yes, no alcohol this episode. I know it's who am I? Who am I, y'all? Oh, and I said y'all too. Just kidding. I don't know. I just drank last couple of days. I'm gonna drink this weekend. I'm gonna stick with water tonight. So anyways, come to find out about Carol M. Bundy and her boyfriend, Doug Clark. They actually, so just to give you like a real quick like recap of what this episode's going to be about, is they went on a series of murders basically between the spring and summer of 1980. And this took place in Los Angeles, California. And they killed women who were like sex workers and runaways. And they actually, the pair is dubbed as the Sunset Strip Killers. So we're going to obviously dive into more because I want to know what happened and how this all came about, because this just leads me into talking about the Murdoch case. So if you're a big murder person, I'm sure you know about this case. And maybe even if you're not a true crimer person, you've probably most likely heard about this case because this trial has been all over the freaking news. And yes, it's been over for a bit, you know, but he was found guilty, like everybody, I hope, thought all along. I mean, the evidence was all right there. But it just, that case, like, started as an accident, you know, like, or a supposed accident done by the son. And then it just spiraled into this huge clusterfuck of shit. I mean, it was one of the most wildest cases I have read in like the longest time. And I actually remember one of my good friends, Alex, in Texas, shout out Alex. She was super into this case. You know, she was actually the first person I think that sent me like all like the articles and stuff on the case. And, you know, I just ended up going into a rabbit hole about it. So obviously when it was on trial, I was there for it all, but still nuts, still just like, mind boggles me a little bit, that case. So if you checked out that case, I have not done an episode on it. I probably will here in the future. Definitely want to talk about that case for sure. I know like Hulu and I think Netflix has got some good documentaries you can watch. We'll catch you up on all of it if you have been living under a rock, as Stassi Schroeder would say, and don't know what the hell I'm talking about. So let's get into Carol. Okay. So according to my Google research and most of this stuff I get on Wikipedia, Carol M. Bundy was born on August 8th, 1942. Carol obviously looks like she had a tough childhood. Her parents were alcoholics. Yikes. Her mother died when she was really young. Oh. And around 11 years old, her father, ooh, this is gross, started to sexually abuse her. So we know where this route is kind of going for Carol. Eventually, Carol's father ended up remarrying and decided it was better for Carol to be in foster care. Okay, so he sends her off to foster care. Really cool, Dad. It says she was in and out of various foster homes, and by the time she was 17, she married a man who was actually 56 years old. Gross. Okay. So obviously he was abusive to her, and it said that she continued like a string of marriages like this, like well into her 30s. So from like 17 to 30, she was in abusive old man, old saggy balls relationship, I would think. So now it seems like by the time Carol was 37, she had been in three marriages ending in abuse and divorce. She did have two children though from the last marriage. And after that, I guess she started living in an apartment, and then this is where it was in LA. She began to have an affair, it says, with her block manager, Jack Murray. And this guy was like a part-time country singer. Okay, so she liked the musicians. Cannot blame her there. Total sucker for musicians. I think that they are talented and wonderful and intelligent. Most of them are. Some of them are alcoholic jerks, but they're still talented. So it looks like Jack was married at the time, and wow, even Carol, I guess she probably must have known Jack's wife. I would assume that, yeah, well, obviously he was the block manager, so I'm wondering if he lived in like the same building as her, with the wife. And it looks like Carol attempted a few times to like bribe Jack's wife to try and leave him. And she became like super obsessive with him and would follow him around to all of his shows. Do-do-do-do-do, stage five clinger. Hello. Yikes. So then Jack's wife looks like has Carol evicted from the apartment, but that didn't stop little Miss Carol. Because she kept showing up at all of Jack's shows. And then this, okay, so they she would go to this bar in particular called Little Nashville. Oh, and this is actually where she meets Doug Clark. Okay. So I know reading this story, it's, I based it around Carol Bundy, and that was strictly totally based on her last name and relating it with Ted Bundy. But actually, I have to be quite honest with you guys. She's not the real star of the show here. It looks like her little friend that she meets at the bar here, Doug Clark, was the one responsible for a lot of what was going down. Interesting. Okay. This looks like a match made in heaven. I don't know about you guys, but I'm a little scared. Let's find out about Doug. Okay, so Doug Clark was born on March 10th, 1948. Does that make him an Aries? I think he's an Aries. Not an Aquarius, right? I don't know. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, his father was actually a naval intelligence officer. Okay, so we know that he was a military baby and or child, and yep, he moved around a lot. Okay, so oh, it looks like Doug says that he claims that he's lived in over 57 countries. Okay, that's a lot of effing moving, and that is a lot. Is that even like possible? For somebody to do? I mean, I guess if you're military, but aren't you like moving like every like month then? I don't know. 57 countries seems like a lot to me, or maybe a bit of an exaggeration. So this must have come from Doug's mouth himself. So, okay. So when Doug was younger, he was sent to an international school in Genovia. He later attended Culver Military School and graduated in 1967. He enlisted in the Air Force then, and it looks like he was stationed in Colorado and Ohio. After that, he was discharged from the Air Force and began the drifter lifestyle. So he was bouncing around the US working as a mechanic. I wonder if he was like honorably discharged or what the deal was with that. Maybe if I keep reading it, it'll tell me. He eventually, okay, so working around and then, okay, so he eventually ended up in LA and he was working at a water and power plant. And then that job says that he left abruptly from that job and started working for Jergens Soap, which is the famous soap company. And oh, he was. But then he was fired because he was absent and, ooh, he was getting in trouble for leaving violent threats to coworkers. Oh, but it says one evening he ended up at a bar called Little Nashville, and that's where he met Carol. Like I said, you guys, I'm a little scared about this relationship. This is not a good way to start things. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm being judgy. Maybe it's just because I know what happens, so I'm already prejudging. But I mean, we are talking about killers here, guys, so it's not like a lot of the killers, especially serial killers, it's not like a lot of them are have great childhoods. I mean, if you know anything about true crime, it's one of the main things about like the psychology behind all of it is people normally have really crazy upbringings, abusive, sexually abusive, alcohol, drugs, you name it, you know. And then there's the very few that, you know, come from privileged families and decide to use money to get away with shit. Murdoch. Just saying. Okay. Okay, y'all. So it looks like, you know, they met. Then they obviously started to date and hang around each other and, you know, do the whole, let's get to know each other. I think theirs went a little different, I would say, than probably most people. I mean, oh God, back to thinking about my Tinder stint that I decided to involve myself in this summer. Some of it was really exciting, you know, getting to know, kind of having like something in common with, you know, somebody and being like, oh, cool. Yeah, that's my favorite movie too. Or yeah, I love to eat that food. Nobody else likes to eat that food. But most of it was awful, on have to be quite honest. I can't stand trying to like get to know dudes. You know, like, I'm like, oh shit, I gotta take a genuine interest in what you like. So, obviously not very good at the whole dating thing, just the whole Tinder thing, you know, it's different when I meet somebody that I connect with, you know, and stuff. So I've definitely had some, you know, good people around me that have, you know, I've had really great connections with and stuff, and that's been cool. But, the other 99% of it all was scary douchebags. You know, I mean, I don't mean to be mean, but like one guy was like, oh, I just got out of rehab. Like I live in a halfway house. And I'm like, bro, like you should not be concentrating on dating right now. You should definitely be concentrating on, I don't know, staying sober. So it was funny too, because he had like a curfew and everything. And I was like, ooh, how is this going to work for me? Because I work full time and then I go to the gym afterwards. And then by the time I get home, just spend time with my kid and then I can get out, you know, and that's probably, if I am going to go out with anybody, it's probably like after the 9 o'clock hour, at least when I was in Kansas, is kind of like what my schedule was. So no. You got a 9 o'clock curfew and this is when I'm coming out to play, like, no thanks. So it probably was just, you know, in the end, a booty call. Cause apparently now I figured out after, you know, being on Tinder that it's the new plenty of fish, which is just not my thing. I am not here to have casual sex. I'm just not your girl, if that's what you're looking for. So, okay. So as like Doug and Carol were getting to know each other, they realized that they had something in common. And this happened to be like a dark sexual interest. Now, I don't know about you guys. I don't think I've been with like crazy kinky people, but I've definitely done some, you know, more exciting stuff, you know, but this is next level weird shit. And this is where everything goes all wrong for the couple, because it looks like Doug at first started bringing prostitutes and like wanted to have threesomes. I understand people that want to have threesomes in relationships and stuff, but like prostitutes, and I don't know. That's just, you're paying for it, and it just brings a level of weirdness, and that definitely obviously not healthy for a relationship, but it also looks like Carol and Doug were both not healthy themselves, you know, mentally is what I say. Because, you know, obviously that increased, and then it increased to Doug like basically confessing to Carol that he was sexually attracted to an 11-year-old in the building that they lived. This is a problem. I literally have a 12-year-old daughter right now, so I get all sorts of eebie-jeebies all over this. So gross. But I guess, this is where Carol goes wrong, you guys. This is she, and you know, I mean, this might have been her, like, you know, sexual fantasy, or maybe satisfying him was kind of like turned her on. But it looks like she was the one that was like got the little girl in the building, like lured her one of the days to like take pornographic pictures for them. That's so sad. I feel so bad for that little girl. Ugh. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. So after that, Doug started, obviously, that's, you know, it just, your sexual desires start to increase and weirder shit start to happen. And in this case, so now Doug says, okay, Carol, well, now I'm interested in killing someone while having sex. Ooh, in particular, he says, wanting to feel a woman's vagina orgasm while being killed. If that's not a fucking red flag, I don't know what the fuck is. But yeah, okay, so it looks like he told her all about this. And then it looks like, okay, so Doug pulled the trigger on this and he came upon two teenagers named Gina and Cynthia. Oh, he had them perform fellatio on him and then he shot them both in the head after that. Okay, he then took their bodies to the garage and raped their dead bodies. So, insert necrophilia. He then dumped their bodies on the Ventura Freeway and law enforcement actually found them the next day. Okay, so Carol didn't know about this because it looks like when Doug came home the next day and told Carol about this, she actually freaked out about it. I don't know like what to degree. It says that she started to get nervous. Ooh, and she even phoned the police and told them that she knew about the murders, but she actually refused to tell them who it was. Wow. Come on down, Carol, to the police station is right, because we're going to get you to confess. I mean, I would think. You know, wouldn't you do that as an investigator? I'd be like, why don't you come on down? I'll buy you some lunch. Let's have a talk. Okay, so the story keeps going. Here it goes. So 12 days later, Doug is said to kill again. And this time, again, it was two sex workers by the name of Karen and Exie. He lured them into his car and did the same thing that he had done to the other ones. So perform fellatio and then shot them in the back of the head. The difference with this one, though, was this time he actually decapitated Exie and took her head home and kept it in the refrigerator. Huh. I'm noting similarities. I mean, I know it's not the Bundy doing it, but okay. So it said that Carol claims that she came home and saw the head. And she too had a different reaction. I guess instead of getting mad, oh my God, you guys, she decided to play along and she put makeup on the head. Okay, I remember now why I was so interested in this case, because after that, Doug performed necrophilia with the head. Of course he did. Okay, so Carol, are you realizing now your boyfriend is a serial killer and a necrophiliac? Okay, so 2 days later, the couple put the head in a box and dumped it in the alleyway. Oh, come on, what's in the box? Come on, guys, tell me you did not reference that movie right away, like when I said the head went in the box, because it's always the first thing I think of. So, yeah, shout out to the movie Seven if you haven't watched it and also have been living under a horror movie rock. Okay, so put the head in the box, dumped in the alleyway. 3 days after that, another body was actually found in the San Fernando Valley. This victim was a runaway. Her name was Marnette, and her body had been killed about 3 weeks after the other homicide that happened. Oh, no, it actually happened 3 weeks before. So this is why law enforcement thought that this possibly could have been Doug's first victim. Wow. Okay, so it looks like when he just started going on the killing spree, he was going on the killing spree and he was keeping it like weeks apart. So according to law enforcement too, there's actually another unidentified girl, and they believe this to be another victim of Doug's, but they're not positive, and they have a composite sketch made, and it's really the only thing to go by because the body was decomposed so much. So basically, they really just didn't have enough evidence to connect him to this other murder, but they clearly knew it was in some sort of connection. And I wonder how long it took law enforcement to kind of connect all these cases together eventually after they caught him. But let's see when he gets actually caught. So Carol, okay, you guys, we obviously know that Carol clearly has stalker tendencies in her because she had her stage 5 clinger moment with that country singer, and she clearly had a drinking problem, so taking after her parents. So while Doug was out killing, Carol, oh my gosh, you guys, you won't believe it, she's still finding herself at Jack Murray shows. So she's still obsessed with this dude. And so it looks like she would, I bet you, you know, they must have been like somewhat of like friends, or he must have been like cordial with her at some point, because it looks like she talked a lot to him and she would get drunk and pour her heart out. Oh, word vomit at the mouth. Well, obviously, I mean, she had all this stuff going on. It's only natural for a lot of people to just start gossiping about this. This is actually totally common. I see a lot in true crime and how people get caught. So eventually it looks like she did tell Jack about the truth about what was going on with Doug. And like, wow. I don't think Jack took her seriously in the beginning, it looks like. It looks like he was probably like sitting there looking at her going, you fucking drunktard, you know, like you must be so 3 sheets to the wind right now that you have no idea what's going on. And you're just saying all these weird things about your boyfriend because you don't want to look like a stalker. So, but I think the one thing that stood out to Jack about all of this is like the details of the case that she was giving him were like super daunting, because, you know, like when you give details about stuff, it's kind of like either you have a really fucked up imagination or you really did do this. So it looks like he did tell Carol that night that he was going to report her to the police. And Carol panicked, of course. And, oh no, it looks like in August of 1980, she ended up luring Jack because she was probably so paranoid that he was going to tell the police about her, that she lured him after a show where she actually enticed him to have sex with her, or forced him, raped him, and then she shot and decapitated him. Okay. Carol, you're now in the game. So unlike Doug, where he kind of like dumped the bodies, they didn't really have a lot of evidence. Carol looks like she was a bit more sloppy, obviously, because she's not clued in with the murder thing. And she left numerous clues for the police. So 2 days later, Carol was actually finally interrogated by the police, and she buckled under the pressure, of course, and made a full confession, which doesn't surprise me at all. I knew she was going to come out and say that. So once they were both arrested, they found the murder weapons at Doug's workplace. Holy crap. So that's where he was storing the actual murder weapons. So it looks like Carol was charged with 2 murders. Jack Murray, the country singer, and an unknown victim she confessed to being a witness of. Okay, so she must have witnessed Doug killing somebody, because Doug was charged with 6 murders, and he actually did, oh God, he actually decided to act in his own defense counsel. Here we go. Okay, another relation to Bundy, and basically tried to blame Carol for it all. I'm not going to say typical man because that's mean, but come on. Gotta be kidding me. But she played quite a big part in it. And then of course she said she was manipulated on everything. And, you know, or he said that she manipulated him on everything and she was actually the real killer. And I'm sure she said vice versa. But the jury, of course, didn't believe him. And in 1983, the jury found Doug Clark guilty on all counts and sentenced him to death. And it looks like upon some more research I did, I know as of 2021, he is actually still sitting on California's death row. It looks like Carol ended up making a plea bargain with the prosecution in return for a testimony against Doug, and she ended up getting 25 years for Jack Murray's murder and 27 years for the other murder. So a total of 52 years. But Carol ended up dying in prison of heart failure on December 9th, 2003. She was the age of 61 when she passed. So, wow. You guys, crazy. I definitely see why I see the similarities to the Bundy case and kind of weird that they had the same last name. Pretty sure there's absolutely no relation to them whatsoever. So don't go down that rabbit hole. But yeah, toxic relationships ended up turning into like a murdering duo. Creepy, scary. Not the first ones to exist. There are plenty of people still out in this world that are probably doing the same thing. So, yeah. Don't be toxic in relationships. You know, listen to people. Love them for who they are. Give your full self, but only to people who deserve it, right? You know, you can't give your full self to everybody. You know, only give it out to the people that you know you can trust with your heart, because everybody's heart's important and everybody needs love. And I think maybe if Carol and Doug had gotten more love in life, or like just even, you know, a chance at life, things could have gone a lot differently for them, like we say about everybody, you know. But then the people that do get chances in life still make crazy ass mistakes, so we're all not exempt to really fucking up in this world. So be good, be nice, enjoy your life, enjoy your friends, keep in touch with them. It's important. Keep in touch with your family. I know I'm really trying to learn that lesson. I've definitely been guilty. I'm horrible at texting. A lot of my friends, especially my ones that are long distance, know how absolutely awful I am sometimes in calling and texting. And but you guys know who you are, and I love you, so don't forget it. I hope you guys enjoyed this next episode that I did, and I will try and stay on top of it. I definitely have more episodes written. I just got to get my butt sitting down and get to the recording station. So I hope you enjoyed it. I missed you all so much. So good about talking about true crime. I know I left probably some new recent cases out that I've been following, so I will try to remember those as we go. And stay sexy, stay cute. Till next time, see you next week or whatever, hopefully on Tuesdays with Trisha.